This is the Love FOCO Show.
We took this blight mission. You know, we gotta remediate blight and think about just neighborhood at a time. You know, we have these plan areas, and North College is one of them.
Welcome to the Love FOCO Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and change makers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everybody, Jeff Faust here, your host for the Love FOCO Show. Today we sit down with Andy Smith from the Urban Renewal Authority. He's got a great story from growing up in Arvada to dodging school in Wyoming and landing at CSU to even just how he met his wife. You're gonna love that story, I know I did. But of course, Andy is doing incredible work in our city through the Urban Renewal Authority, particularly with an eye to revitalize North College and everything that's happening on the north side of Fort Collins. And so I hope you love this conversation. He's got a lot of really good things to share about the future of our city and the way that he is trying to incorporate our citizens in the renewal of different neighborhoods. And man, I hope you love this conversation. I know I sure did. So let's take a listen to what Andy has to say. Well, Andy, thank you so much for being here with me. I'm so grateful for your time. I know you're probably a really busy guy. You've got all kinds of projects kind of on your plate, but appreciate you giving some time to the Love FOCO podcast to share your story and talk a little bit about this great city and what you're up to. I want to get into your work. I want to get into the ways you see our city uniquely from your vantage point, the way you're loving our city one life at a time. But before we do any of that, I just want to start our conversation the way I start every podcast on the Love FOCO Show. Tell us your Fort Collins origin story. Like, where did you come from? What was it like landing in Fort Collins? Or were you born and raised here and have always been here? So just tell us your origin story to Fort Collins.
Yeah, you bet, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Well, I grew up in Arvada, not too far from here.
Yeah,
and I was going to go to the University of Wyoming, and I couldn't find a place to live up there because I was going in as a sophomore, and so I was on the way back to Denver, frustrated. I was with my mother, and we're going back to Arvada, and I'm like, "Oh, this is terrible! I'm not going to find a place." And I was all set on going. I mean, I had my classes all picked and everything, and so my mom said, like a good mom, she goes, "Let's stop in Fort Collins, and let's just go have lunch, and maybe your cousin is in town," and she was going to school here. So we stopped at, there was a payphone out on the other side of the river on North College years ago at this pizza place.
You just dated yourself a little bit.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
Going to the payphone era.
Yeah, and I think I had change, even, yeah. You know. So we called my cousin, and she happened to be, she lived in Rams Village, and she said, "Yeah, let's go to lunch. Come on over." So my mom and I drove there, and we went through, you know, we went through Old Town, and I was like, "Wow, what a, you know, this is cool. This is 1992."
Okay.
And I came here about the same week actually that Sonny Lubick came to town, and so we drive down Laurel right past the campus, in the Oval, and there's all these big trees. And I'm like, "Yeah, they don't have trees in Wyoming. I mean, this is really
the
beautiful."
The wind knocked them all down.
yeah, they got telephone poles. Yeah. That's about it. That's the closest tree they got, but. So then we go there, and I meet her and her three roommates, and I'm like, "Wow, okay, this is great." And then we go over to CB Potts, which was a restaurant in Elizabeth. It was a gathering place. It was, I mean, this was middle of the day, and it's just, you know, it's popping. And we sit down, and my cousin says right away, she goes, "Wait, now tell me again, why are you, you know, working so hard to go to school in Wyoming?" And I said, "That's a great question. I'm not gonna. I said, "Can I come here?" And she's like, "Yeah, well, let's make it happen." So one thing led to another, and I was here 2 weeks later, and I haven't
really
left. Yeah.
Wow.
I said no to Wyoming, came here, and yeah, the mountain biking was awesome, and I mean, yeah, it was a pretty easy decision to make.
Yeah.
On you know, on the fly.
So back up for me just a little bit, because I'm curious. I mean, I've been down to Arvada. I've gone to some of the restaurants there. I've got a friend who leads a church in Arvada. Is CSU and is Fort Collins like on the radar for folks in Denver, or is it mostly CU? Yeah. And then like how did CSU, like how was it not on your radar, I guess? Yeah. I mean, this is kind of interesting to me.
That's a good question. You know, I took a gap year or maybe a little bit more than a gap year after high school.
Okay.
And but I had a lot of friends that went to school here.
Yeah.
And but it was never on the radar, and I wanted to get out of town, you know, and not too far. And my father had just recently passed away, so I was pretty tight with my mom, wanted to hang out with her, but yeah, I had a lot of friends up here, and but I didn't get into the college life. And really, like a lot, I was working, and you know, a bunch of my friends were in a fraternity, but I never hung out with them at all. I went mountain biking, and I was a little bit of a ski bum. But yeah, there's still a lot of folks, I think, from Arvada in particular that came up here to Fort Collins to go to school. Yeah.
Yep. So it wasn't a totally like foreign concept. It was. It just hadn't landed on you until you got to all those awesome places you're talking about. I mean, the Oval has a way of kind of stealing your heart. And they're like, I could imagine, you know, a young adult showing up and being like, oh, this is pretty great, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Instant, like, this is it. You know, just like, you know, when I met my wife, you know, it was like,
yeah,
okay, right away.
This is it.
Yeah.
Tell me about that gap year experience. I you know, the gap year thing has become more popular recently. But I imagine it wasn't super popular in the early 90s. It was just getting introduced even to our, I mean, Europe, like this is everywhere in Europe, but it was kind of still probably a new idea in the 90s.
Yeah, you know, and it was, you know, it wasn't really a gap year, like, you know, of, you know, I know a guy that created a curriculum for like this, you know, create the pillars of your life. And it's, you know, for kids who would do a very intentional gap year. It wasn't anything like that.
Okay.
It was
a gap year by mistake, or
it was. Well, you know, right after high school, I mean, you know, my father had just passed away. I had a rough year, my senior year, and I knew it was enough about myself that, like, I better take a year off and not do this, and I knew that because I went to one class at a college in Denver, literally one class, and I left in the middle of the class, and I was like, okay, I'm not ready for college,
yeah,
and so I need to work. So I worked and I skied and I hung out and. That was about it. And I probably partied, you know, with my cronies a little bit too much, but.
Well, and your dad passed away. I didn't know that. I'm sorry to hear that. That's a younger age for you to lose a father. You were like a junior in high school, in high school?
I had just completed my senior year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that probably had something to do with it too. I mean, you just had to process and grieve and mourn and do all the stuff that comes following the loss of a parent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wanted to hang out with my mom, and I had just found mountain biking, and it was, you know, and was really throwing myself into it. Between mountain biking and skiing, I was having a great time, and I was like, there's just no hurry about this, and I was working. I really liked my job. You know, I was working part time, catching shoplifters, and that was fun. And
you know, wait, what? Yeah. Your part-time job was catching shoplifters.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I mean, that begs a question. What is that? Like, what does that mean?
Well,
do you have a badge and a gun, or was it something else?
No, it was you know, it's called loss prevention or asset protection in retail. And so I did that. I did that all through college, actually. I caught about 650 people over the period
amazing.
Of a few years. Yeah, I did it for a couple different retailers, and I did it down in Denver and did it up here. And then I freelanced, and I was going to different grocery stores, just popping in, and you know, only the store manager knew what I was there for. And I'd catch employees. And
yeah. Were you paid on commission? Like every bad guy you get caught, you get this in return.
I probably should have, but no, I wasn't. No, it was a super fun job. I mean, I wouldn't do it now.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit more dangerous, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was super fun.
Yep.
And yeah, so when I came up here, I did that, you know, and met my wife, you know, she wasn't shoplifting. she was working at the store, and I saw her, you know, I was on a camera system, and I saw this girl, and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, and she was working there during the summers and on break, and so it was a fun job. And
did you pursue her? Did you strike up a conversation with her, or like how?
Well,
how did you go from looking at her from behind a security camera to going out for lunch or dinner?
Gosh, Jeff, you make me sound like a creep. She probably thinks so too. She's got a different version too. You should probably call her.
Well, it's a slightly different version. I'm just here with you. So we'll take whatever version you have.
I mean, I knew that she was classy. I could tell. And so, I don't know why, but a friend of mine, my boss, was like, you know, he asked her, hey, what would you think about it? If this guy were to ask you out, and she was like, tell him to find out.
I was like, I don't know why, I was really scared.
Yeah. But I mustered it up, and
it's scary. It's vulnerable.
Well, it's a vulnerable moment.
And I knew
that she was the one. I mean, and I didn't want to tell her that. I mean, first of all, I'm watching her on a camera, and I don't want to tell her. Guess what? We're getting married. I figured all that might combine to get a face full of bear spray.
I love this. You know? I love everything about this story.
Sorry. Yeah, well, it was a fun time in my life to get up here and I was having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I know you're the head of Urban Renewal Authority. Is that like what would be your actual title?
I'm the redevelopment manager for the city, and then the Urban Renewal Authority is a distinct governmental entity that's affiliated with the city.
Yep.
And there's some crossover, like. Well, I'll tell you some of those in a moment, but I work for the acting executive director. And then I have a board and I have a couple of teammates but I manage the operations and really the real estate strategy. So a lot of the projects that you might hear about that we're doing up North College in particular with the motels
and
those have been,
it's a big deal for our city.
They've been wonderful projects. I
want to dig into that. I want to take as deep of a dive as we can into that because it's a part of our town that is going to see, I think, a lot of movement and a lot of action in the coming days.
For sure.
But I'm wondering how you get into that. Like, I mean, did you grow up dreaming about architecture and building reallocation, and did you grow up like dreaming about city plan, things like that, or where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I had kind of a zigging and a zag, and some strikes and some gutter balls and everything along the way in my career. After I graduated from Colorado State, I got a degree in economics, and I went to work in banking right away. And then I was young and dumb and ambitious. Well, I got married in school and had my oldest daughter and so I was in banking, and then I went out on my own and so I did a few different things over the years, including I was a CFO of an e-commerce company and did a tech startup and had a willingness
to take risks.
Way too many when I was young. Yeah, I was like, I didn't think anything could stop me.
Yeah.
But it gave me a lot of skills and
not every 20-year-old has that though. You know, even young men who like, you know, their prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until they're 20, you know.
Mine's still not. No.
There's still a lot of folks who are just like, I'm just gonna find my lane and do my thing. Yeah. And that's not, it's not better or worse or anything like that, but it is unique to sit across from a guy who's like, yeah, I was thinking about going to Wyoming, and then I went to the Oval and I went out to eat and I decided, no, I'm not, I'm going here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pivot. That's a quick pivot.
Yeah, kind of.
Or to go out and start a company or get an e-commerce or do these things. I'm sure you thought about them, but I mean, those are more risky adventures than maybe just finding your 9-to-5 and kind of grinding it out for the first 10 years of your life.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
You know, I wish that I could say more of them were successful than not, but they weren't. And I learned a lot about being humble and my station life and what my relationships were about. It's taken me a long time through all of that, but and just all these experiences. I did downtown planning, and then I got into commercial real estate about 12 years ago, I guess. And I liked that a lot. And all this time I've been volunteering for the city. I started volunteering for the city in 97 on a board and commission, the CDBG commission, and then I was on the planning and zoning board. I chaired that, and I'd been on these boards and commissions, and then I was on the Urban Renewal Authority board, and that's how I got exposed to it. And in my position now, it's really a combination of everything I've done. There's some finance, there's some real estate, there's some, you know, elements of crime fighting. I mean, the URA is exclusively for blight, to remove blight from the community. So there's a lot of crime going on in some of those motels that we're acquiring. So it was this weird combination of everything I'd done and having a deep understanding of the city as a community, but also the city government and its history and where it had been, different touch points along the way. It was an unusual way
it's
to
so
combine it all.
Interesting to me. Like, I mean, I have, you know, we've done a couple dozen of these interviews for the Love Foco show. Obviously, by trade, I'm a pastor, so I meet all kinds of different people, different stages of life. The amount of times I meet someone, 30s, 40s, 50s, or beyond, and when we begin to pull on kind of the strings of their life, you realize all of these previous experiences are coalescing into like this moment.
Yeah.
It's just really interesting that none of those things get wasted, or I guess they could be, but if you have a way of learning from them and growing from them, even the times you fail, you can log that experience, you can grow from that time, and it comes back in a moment of redemption or a moment of a new job and a new position that's going to equip you for something in the future. What would you say, you know, maybe to, well, I mean, you have kids, or if you were in a room of 20 somethings at CSU pursuing some of their early adventures, knowing half their room is going to fail at a job within the first 3 years, how would you begin to talk with someone about what they're going to experience, what they're going to learn, and how they can grow from that?
I think it's a great question. There is, you know, I've learned to be, I mean, over the years, maybe the hard way. Well, you know, I've grown up in Fort Collins, you know, I mean, I really have. I've spent, you know, 2/3 of my life here. So this town has got to see me grow up for better or worse.
Yep.
And so I think what I've learned is that, you know, to be humble, to be teachable, and that your plans are, you know, your plans and they probably aren't going to go exactly the way you thought. Yeah. You know, like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan, then you get punched in the mouth. Yeah. And so to roll with it but it's all about, I mean, to me, really about relationships. Like if I wouldn't have had some of the great relationships that I do, you know, my wife, my faith, my kids, you know, others that are close and that really, you know, wanted the best for me, even if it was uncomfortable. You know, I mean, I would have, I'd be a disaster. And so, you know, to stay in one place and to be open and humble and to be teachable, curious, it makes for an interesting life, I think. That's what I probably would tell kids that are in their 20s. And also, don't take yourself so serious.
Yeah.
Have a sense of humor.
Yeah. I had one of my mentors in my 20s just kind of teasing out this humility thing that you're talking about, because I would agree with you. I think it's incredibly important, especially if you want to fail forward, not fail backwards. He had always said, look, you can humble yourself or you can be humbled.
Yeah.
You know, but like one of those things you can choose, but like what is an assumed reality of the human experience is that you will encounter opportunities for humility.
Oh, without a doubt.
Whether it happens to you or you just willingly kind of create that posture in your heart.
Yeah.
And one's easier than the other.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes we just can't learn the lessons unless it's imposed
upon us. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those experiences, they have a way of sticking a little bit deeper.
Yeah, they do. They do. And I can think about every time in my life where I fell right before that was my pride, you know? And so it's a pattern that's, it's hard to disregard it or pretend like it's not there.
Yep. Were you, I mean, you had kind of listed off a bunch of different things that you had led or volunteered or started to trot.
Yeah.
Were those characteristics that you saw like in a young Andy, like an elementary or middle school Andy, or did they emerge later in life? It sounds like you were always, at least in your adult life, like you've always been engaged civically, you've always been volunteering. Were you that kind of student, or was that, like, how did that come about in your heart and in your life?
You know, I think I always wanted to be involved in bigger things. You know, that I always, when I was a kid, I had a, you know, I had a subscription to Newsweek magazine. I'd read it. So the idea of like international relations and...
How old were you when you got your subscription to Newsweek?
I think I was pretty young. I might have been like fifth grade or something.
That is awesome. And I love that part of your story.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, you know. And so I'm a history buff. I'm a poli-sci buff and a geography buff. And,
yeah.
And you know, and I mean, I don't care at all about pop culture celebrities or anything. I mean, I've always been more interested in timeless ideals and the way that, you know, civic affairs and philosophy. And so yes. I think, you know, what always struck me about Fort Collins was just the way that it had become the community that it had become because of big thinking. And it was always attractive.
Yeah.
All the, you know, all the elected officials and mayors that I've known over the years, it's always, you know, talking about big ideas and not people. And
yeah, there's some learning experiences there. We could all be taking notes. Because Fort Collins, it is this amazing, and in large part, we talk about this individually in our lives, that we're the sum of all these experiences in our past.
That's right.
Our city is the same way. We've had some incredible decisions made before we were here.
Yeah.
By incredible leaders that were forward-thinking, and they were probably able to do that because they, you know, they were reading Newsweek when they were in fifth grade, not whatever else was published back then. I mean, I remember the kinds of magazines my brother and I asked for, and it was not Newsweek, I can tell you that. It's like ESPN.com or Sports Illustrated was really popular when I was young.
Yep.
Like, send us those magazines, but... Yeah, you and I—we were living different lives. You were reading Newsweek, and
that was the one side of me that was very interested. But, you know, I mean, I was a knucklehead for sure. You know, just making dumb decisions. But I was just—I've always been interested in you know, I'm not into politics really. Yeah, I was for a while years ago, but, you know, the idea, the big ideas, the wicked problems. What can we do?
Yeah,
and you know, let's be bold and. Go after big solutions when we can.
Yeah. You tell me a little bit about that, because before the interview started, we were just kind of walking from the front door up to my office, and one of the things that you had mentioned to me, I'd love to get this recorded, is you said it pays to be bold. It's good to be bold.
Yeah.
How have you learned that, or how have you experienced that in your professional life, in your personal life?
Yeah.
Just riff on that for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I think that, you know, you just learn so much about yourself when you take a risk. And I've skinned my knees more times than not taking big risks. But they shaped me. And I just think you step out of your comfort zone and you can make an impact, and it's fun if you're with the right people. I mean, especially if it's for the right thing. I mean, if you're doing something bold and it's, you know, mission oriented and it has purpose and you know what that is and you have consistency of purpose of what you're doing and why, the why is everything.
Yeah.
So if you understand the why to be bold, it's natural. You wouldn't want to be going if your why doesn't require you to be bold, you probably need a bigger why.
You need a bigger why. Yeah, that's for sure. Well, tell me about some of those big ideas that you're looking at with the city right now.
Yeah.
I would love to, well, first, maybe just fill in for all the listeners kind of what it is that you do and how your role and your responsibilities can lead and lend itself to some of those bold ideas that you are envisioning for the city and what you find yourself, how, you know, how your time is being occupied right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, we're at a bit of a crossroads in the city, and you know, there's quite a few folks that feel, you know, left behind. Affordability is a big issue. for sure. And I think that, you know, and I think we've lost a lot of some of our, you know, civic engagement and interest. The town and gown relationship with CSU may not be as good as it was once. We really built this town, I think. And so I think that there's, you know, there's all these different problems, and I found myself in a position to work on not everything, but a few things. And so I manage the URA with this team. I mean, if I didn't have the team and the board that I do have, it would be totally a failure. But I've got a board that's very visionary, innovative risk taking, and they support you know, my team to be bold as well. And so, you know, the URA, the Urban Renewal Authority, was started in 1982 by the city council, and it was charged with removing blight. And it's a separate governmental entity. I can get into all the boring stuff, but it's separate because we have our own attorneys, we have our own budget, and the board, we have a board of commissioners that has 11 members, and 7 of those members are the Fort Collins City Council.
Okay.
And then a Larimer County Commissioner, Kristen Stevens, is our vice chair. Poudre Library Board member Matt Shield is on there. And then Jess Zamora from the Poudre School District Board's on there. And then we have a subject matter expert and appointed member to give us an odd number, and that's Dan Sapienza. So we have this 11-member board that's fairly regional in perspective. And so, you know, PSD has kind of the same problems, not all the same problems, but a few of the same problems or challenges that the city does, that the county does, the library board, and, you know, affordability, and you know, that's one of them for sure. And yeah. Finances, right?
Yep.
So
affordability and finances, which can create inertia for that to just continue, because if you can't afford it, then you'll move east.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily you're going to leave the state or even the county, but you might move municipalities.
Totally.
You know, just the migration patterns within Northern Colorado, I'm sure impacts the way you guys are making decisions today.
Yeah. 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 It's a great point. When I first moved here, there was 96,000 people, I think, and we've doubled since then.
Wow.
And Greeley was a long distance phone call.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would drive down to Denver and it was farms, you know, between here and there, and the dog track. So there was, you know, it was just, you know, Fort Collins was kind of this great little, awesome little town. It was, lots of hippies and cowboys, and I don't know if we have any more of either in this town anymore, unfortunately. But there was a guy that used to tie up his horse out front of City Drug. You see him every now and then. I'd be walking around, you know, my bank job, and there's that horse tied up out front.
And this was not that long ago. I mean, you said you moved here in '92.
Yeah, yeah. So that would have been kind of toward the late '90s, before 2000.
Right.
I think back to your question, you know, we've got these problems with, affordability. You know, we got a lot of folks driving in and out of the community, and you got infrastructure problems, not a whole lot of funding to pay for a lot of the infrastructure, environmental issues, I mean, you know, sprawling out. And so, you know, they're all kind of related in so many different ways. And so, you know, we took this blight mission. You know, we got to remediate blight and think about just neighborhood at a time. You know, we have these plan areas, and North College is one of them. We have a couple of others, and so North College has been, you know, we started up there in 2004, and it's a 25-year clock that we can use this special financing tool called TIF, tax increment financing. And so there's been quite a few projects up there. The development of the King Supers Marketplace, the Lyric Theater, put some money into Jack's, all the streetscape improvements, some stormwater improvements. There's been a few projects, but then, you know, just, you know, about 2 years ago, we started thinking, well, there's that giant 50,000 square foot vacant Albertsons grocery store that's been a drag on the neighborhood. So we started really digging in on that. What could that be?
Yep.
And it can't be that anymore. We got to do something different.
and then, you know, a couple of motels that are really, you know, problematic as far as, I mean, 300 to 400 police calls a year each.
A little gnarly little space in town.
Yeah, really bad, and they spill over. And so, you know, and so we thought, let's be bold and let's do stuff that we've never done before. The URA's never bought real estate, and you know, we'd always kind of been responsive to other development proposals and maybe kick in a few dollars to make it happen. And the board was saying, we don't have a lot of the bureaucratic hoops to go through or processes. Like, this is very nimble, very fast. The board can make decisions and direct us what to do with some resources and do it right now. Mm-hmm. And so, well, we were like, well, why don't we go buy those motels and let's get rid of those. Let's take care of that. Let's you know, that's got to stop.
Yeah.
And let's put a community hub somewhere near where the King Supers is. If not, I mean the Albertsons, the old Albertsons. If not in the building, somewhere near there. So, yeah, we've been on this pretty aggressive path to make investments in the North College neighborhood to prevent the return of blight conditions. And so far, it's been well received. The community's excited. We've heard from business owners up there that they've already noticed a big difference in terms of human behavior problems in their parking lots or in their businesses. And now we've got a lot of, you know, the future is bright. We've got a lot of really exciting potential for new housing projects up there and vocational training and different partners. That's the beauty of what we do, is the relationships and the partnerships that will come together up on North College, and then probably over time through other pockets of town, other neighborhoods, really focused approach.
Well, I'd love to talk a little bit more about that and just share whatever you want or take a pass. It's fine too. But I've found myself, I've lived here, gosh, since 2017. So I wasn't born and raised here or anything like that. I moved here from Kansas City. But I noticed pretty quickly that Fort Collins you kind of live in the pockets where you want to live. I mean, it's not a giant city. So there are surely people that frequent every part of our town, but for a large percentage of our population, they kind of have their neighborhoods and they kind of have their spots.
Yeah.
And so for folks who maybe haven't been on North College in a while, they might be surprised to see some, well, I wouldn't call them high rises. I don't know what you would call condos,
mid-rise.
And apartments,
yeah.
Mid-rises.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, Denver Rescue Mission is being built on the west side, a block off of North College. Making incredible progress on that building. I'm really excited for Seth, who was a previous interview on the Love Foco show and the work that they're doing at Denver Rescue Mission. But that quadrant of our town, it really is changing. I would encourage anybody to drive on North College and just see, if they haven't been up there in a while, how it's changing. You see more diversity as well. Storefronts with, you know, Spanish language on the front of the door sign and all kinds of different kind of windows into the diversity in our city. Tell us about some of those like next steps that you might see to kind of continue to build up that part of the town and also, you know, eliminate some of that blight, as you were saying.
Yeah. It's, I'm glad you mentioned it. I mean, the fact that there's businesses that are, you know, Spanish language signs and the types of businesses up there, that's the best part of North College is that it is more than half of the residents up there speak Spanish for their primary language.
Yeah.
And it's a cultural place that's, you know, that's very special. It's historic. So anything that we do up there, that's kind of job number one, is do no harm in terms of displacement or gentrification. Yeah. There's a lot of residents that live up there, live in mobile home communities, and we have no interest in, you know, those mobile homes whatsoever, those communities. We'd like to figure out ways to support, you know, investments into their infrastructure, clean water, and some of the basics, you know, but also, you know, there's quite a few, Hispanic, Latino businesses up there that we want to continue to support. And everything that we do, we want it to be, you know, kind of have that flavor of the culture and allow organizations like, you know, La Familia, to connect with the community and get a voice for the community in everything that we do. So when we start looking to redevelop the former Albertsons. We call it 1636, by the way. After we bought the property that day, we said, okay, we'll never say Albertsons again.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that it's a bad word, but it's a bad word.
Yeah.
And so we say, you know, it's 1636. So when we start to redevelop 1636, we'll start right away with the real clear signal to the Spanish-speaking neighborhoods that, hey, we have a community hub here. For you, it's for the whole community.
Yep.
But this is a place where your culture is celebrated.
Yeah.
You should feel welcome.
We built this with you in mind, and yeah.
Well, yeah, and they're going to build. I mean, that's the thing, is we're building it for and it's going to be built by them in a lot of ways, yeah, if we do it right.
What do you think is going to go in there?
Well, almost certain we're going to knock down the building.
Okay.
It's in horrible condition, way worse than we thought. So, but we've got about 4.63 acres. And we have some agreements with some of the property owners around there. We might acquire some more property.
Yeah.
But overall, we're gonna enter into right now we're working to enter into a partnership with the Urban Land Conservancy from Denver, who will be our development partner. And we'll start kind of master planning and programming uses to build what we'd like to be this, you know, focal point for North College, a central gathering place with, it's very walkable, very dense, mixed use, plenty of housing. And to, you know, look at what you see right now is these big asphalt parking lots and say, you know, the neighborhoods should reclaim that. This should become woven right into the fabric of the existing neighborhoods.
Yep.
It's not a big, yeah, just this heat island.
Yeah, the parking lot thing has been, I've learned a lot about parking lots since, you know, stepping into the role that I'm in. And of course, we're renovating a building right now to be a little bit of a community resource and hub. And I've learned so permeable and impermeable concrete and,
yeah,
you know, trees and shade and all these things. And, you know, even the flow of storm water and,
yep,
what's good and how bad my property is. Yeah. You know, it's like how we can, uh-oh, mitigate some of that and fix some of that. And those aren't cheap problems. They're necessary, but they're not cheap to figure out.
Yeah, yeah, Jeff, good for you for sticking with it. Once you started in there, a lot of folks get into that process and they're like, well, it was a good idea until it wasn't.
Yeah.
I'm gonna move on and find something a little bit easier.
Well,
to do.
Like you, my name might be on a lot of documents, but like you, it's a team and it's a host of people,
yeah,
behind me. You know, I mean, boards and support staff and me just saying, can we meet for happy hour? Like, I have 100 questions.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, how, you know, let alone a for-profit tackles that, but definitely how, you know, us as a nonprofit are going to tackle that. And so you have to get really creative and, yeah, and some things just have to go before other things.
It's true.
But if you're going to be bold and if you're going to try to innovate and leave the space better than you received it, it's worth figuring some of that stuff out.
Oh,
it's with the hard work, yeah, you know, good stuff always comes on the tail end of hard work.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And that's, you know, we try to tell our kids, you know, do hard things, you know, it's very important for your life.
Yeah.
You'll have a rewarding life. And I think most folks believe that when you give them the opportunity to share in that, you know, when we've had our conversations about whatever we're doing up on North College, we say, you know, we're kind of like, oh, here's this kind of out of the box vision for what we might be able to do together. And what do you think? And then folks, what can you add to this?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? And folks start saying, I have an opportunity to be part of something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to. And what if we did this? What if we did this? Give some people have some ownership. And then all of a sudden, you know, it starts to become 1 + 1 = 3. And it's a, yeah. And the power of those relationships. And I don't think money's scarce, you know, vision is. So when you start to create vision and cast it out there and you could articulate it and share it and give other folks opportunity to add to it, the money follows.
I like that phrase a lot. I'm going to use that phrase. I'm going to remember it and I'm going to use it. That money is not scarce, vision is.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, if we can cast the vision, if we can build it, it's amazing. There's a lot of money out there in the world.
Yeah, I think there still is.
There is. Yeah. Even with all the,
yeah,
even with all the volatility, even with all the turmoil, even with all the news articles you can read and the stuff that you can discover, there still is a lot of resources. Especially where we live, and we've been blessed with a lot of resources. And you know, not just a lot of resources, but also there's a lot of people who want to put it to work.
That is true.
Which is great. I'm sure, you know, the number of nonprofits we have, Denver Rescue Mission, all the stuff that you're trying to do on North College, it doesn't happen. I mean, you need both of those things. You need the resources, but you also need to be able to mobilize the people and put their money where their mouth is. And thankfully, we've got a community that's doing that. So.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, as you look at this city, obviously professionally, but how do you find yourself engaged in the community personally? Are there things that you're up to, that you're just passionate about, things that you love about our city, ways that you're giving back outside of kind of your work life that you would love to talk about?
Wow. You know, my kids have really taken a lot of that, you know, and we've homeschooled our kids.
Kids do have a way of kind of setting your schedule for you.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. You know, and that was, you know, when we had little kids, you know, we had all these little toddlers, you know, they own your time. Yeah. And our adult children now, they require maybe not as much time, but the challenges are even more complex. Mm-hmm. And so
it's hard for young parents to get that. Yeah. I think it is, you know, like I remember when we had three kids under the age of five in our house. Yeah. And we were just overwhelmed. Yeah. You know, like we felt really good if we showered and went out to eat. Like that was like we were winning in life right now if we could make that happen. And I remember talking to older families and them just kind of thinking we were just being cute, you know, and like, yeah, good try. Like, yeah, sure. Now my kids aren't your kids' age, but you know, we're having conversations now about what it would look like to drive. We're having conversations about how to interact with social media and you know, be on the devices that can melt your brains. And we're having conversations about different activities. How many activities is too? I mean, it's a different kind of pressure that I imagine as I listen to you and as I have other people in my life. It actually doesn't go away. There just are more consequences to some of the decisions that you make. They're more complex problems, I think you say.
Yeah, I think that is true. And I know for sure that, you know, for my wife and I, she's always leaned in to her role as a mother exceptionally well and been very present and involved in every aspect of my kids' lives. And recently I did too, you know, I mean, a little bit. I think when I was younger, I was so focused on, you know, whatever business I was in and, you know, and my own needs and over time, you know, I've become a lot more interested in their problems. Maybe I understand the adult problems a little bit better than I did when there was a Barbie fight, you know, my daughter's a fight over Barbie. I'm like, I don't know, solve that. Yeah. I can't deal with that. But yeah, I wish I would have listened more to mentors. I had great mentors around me that were more than happy to tell me, you know, and provide me some good sage wisdom, but I just couldn't hear it. And I regret that now. I wish I would have listened more. So now I'm listening to some older friends and I'm kind of just being present in this season with my kids for sure.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's probably, you know, the most of it, you know, the homeschooling effort, you know, we started a school about 10, 11 years ago, kind of a hybrid, school for homeschoolers. So that takes a lot of our time.
Like but a co-op,
somewhat.
A bunch of homeschoolers kind of getting together for different classes or.
Yeah. It's a classical curriculum. It's pretty, it's not a co-op so much of being, but yeah, we follow a curriculum and kids all learn Latin and the Socratic method. And so we've done that. That's been a labor of love and I did all my kind of, you know, I was always volunteering with the city. I was like, this is something I can do. And it was mutually beneficial for sure, serving on boards and commissions. And I've always, you know, we lived on the west side of town since I got here, you know, and the little pocket, the little neighborhood, you know, how, you know, the campus west area reinvents itself every couple of years. It's always fresh and it's sometimes gritty but some things never change over there. So, you know, that's kind of, it's fun. I fish. I try to fish as much as I can. And you know, of course, when I came here, I lived over right by the trails so I could mountain bike and still do. And
Yeah, it's been a whole exposure to new different recreational opportunities when I moved out here from the Midwest. You know, the fishing thing is super interesting to me. So like I grew up in Iowa. We moved from Kansas City, but I grew up in Iowa and fished in Minnesota all the time.
Okay.
I had never heard of catch and release before in my entire life.
Yeah.
I had never heard, you know, in the Midwest, like you're catching walleye and you are eating them.
Yeah, yeah.
And when my buddies were like, let's go fishing, fly fishing. Like, I want to take you, I want to be the first guy to take you fly fishing or whatever. Yeah. And when I heard about catch and release, I thought something was wrong.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you spending all this effort? And then but now I've learned a lot more about the culture of catch and release, of course, and just like the river, you know, and things like that. It's just different than kind of the lake fishing of the upper Midwest.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I think I taught myself how to fly fish when I was a banker and it was the only time my wife ever told me that I might be, she said, you know, I think that, you know, we want to give each other all the freedom to be able to pursue your hobbies and whatever. But I probably don't, I think you need to come home a little bit. Because I was fishing like four times a week after work. I'd, you know, in the back of my truck, we had my waders and, you know, and I'd sit on my tailgate and take off my suit and put on my waders. So I fished like 80 days one year and it was crazy. But
just something about it though, just kind of like gets you into a different world or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 3 hours in, you know, wet wading in the Poudre for 3 hours is like a 2 week vacation.
Yeah.
Like you just come back and everything's different, you know, it's such a full sensory experience. And yeah. And I've never kept a fish. At one time I accidentally killed one. Foul hooked it, it bled out and died in my hands, and I felt terrible.
Yeah.
So I took it, I stopped fishing and took him into town to a buddy's house, lives on the north side of town. And I was like, you can probably do something with this. He's like, yeah, darn right, I'll eat it. And that was it. But I did get a taste of the Minnesota fishing a few years ago. My brother-in-law lives there, and we went up and did the whole, we were in Wisconsin, he had a lake house, and we were, you know, trolling around on eating brats, you know, all day, like six or seven brats and
it's brats, beer, and walleye.
Drinking cold beer.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I was like, I could get used to it.
Yeah,
this.
Well, there's not a lot else to do in Wisconsin, so that's just kind of becomes, but it's a good life. It's a good lake life.
Oh, I could do that.
It's a good lake life.
For a couple weeks every year.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, we all need these things, especially, you know, for me recently, it's been golf. I don't know why I chose such an expensive one.
Yeah.
But there's just something that happens when I'm fully in. That I'm not actually solving the problems of the day. I'm just doing like a methodical, repeatable exercise. I'm out in open air and it seems like the world stops for a couple hours at a time.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, it's super healthy. And I've heard that experience from a lot of people who love fly fishing.
Yeah.
That just getting out on the river and just cast and that kind of repetitive movement just kind of melts away some of the stress and helps you enter into a different space. And
oh, yeah, it does.
Re-engages you for more bold vision and more ideas that are going to be coming the next day.
Yeah, it's very real, you know. The rocks are timeless, you know, and you're standing on them and the water, you know, the river's been there, you know, since the beginning and it's there. And it's like, okay, you connect with this long history and sometimes it's, you know, it can be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a couple of weird incidents on, you know, up there and, but yeah, it's fun. I mean, I used to, you know, I don't know, for all the years I've been fishing since, you know, I guess now 30 some years, I've only fished with people probably 4 or 5 times. I always go alone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll be able to do that as I age, you know, whether that's smart or not, but you know, I've done stuff. Hey, people will say, well, I'll beach up at Ted's place. Yep. You know, let's fish. I'm like, okay, I'll meet you at Ted's place. What time? And they'll say, we'll meet you at 4 o'clock. At 3:30, I go right past it. I'm like, where were you yesterday? I didn't see you. You know, if I shouldn't say that on this, while I was listening. I've done that a few times to people.
The thing that kind of sticks out to me about just what you're talking about is so much of our lives are lived in like one hemisphere of our brain. You know, the left side of the brain or the right side. We find our little track and this is what we're good at. This is what we do day in, day out. And so, you know, nonprofit world, again, my world, faith-based nonprofit. So we talk a lot about half-brain Christianity, for instance, is like a phrase that I use a lot with the people that are on my team, in that we are not actually forming whole humans if we're only forming half their brain. And so how can we create opportunities for our spiritual formation to include both hemispheres of the brain? Some denominations and some backgrounds do that better than others. But what strikes me as you talk about your hobbies and getting out on the river, it really is an opportunity to engage the fullness of your brain. I mean, you're not just thinking pure logical, just rationally solving problems, but you're incorporating a much more physical, you're surrounded by the creative kind of part of our world. It's a full brain experience.
Yeah.
And if we could find ourselves in more spaces like that, I think it would do us all really well.
I agree. It's amazing. It's amazing what we can hear when we're just listening.
Yeah.
And just that still monastic, you know, mindset of, okay, I'm just going to full sensory experience and check out and do that with quite a bit of frequency.
Yeah.
Of just step out of it a little bit and hear your own heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, hey, this has been a great conversation. I've enjoyed this conversation and just like learning a little bit about your life and history. What you're doing on North College, I think, is going to continue to be a really important part of thinking about our city as a whole, and not just like the little pockets that maybe people spend more time in. But I look forward to just continuing to see the revitalization of North College with the flavor and with like the heartbeat of who's there, who calls that part of Fort Collins home, and how their voice and their heart can continue to be seen in that space. I don't know if you have any parting words or any final things that you would like to share, but I just kind of finish our conversation with giving you a moment to share anything that's maybe been unsaid up to this point.
Gosh, I mean, I'll say hi to my kids. You know, I can't think of anything. I mean, I guess I would just, I love Fort Collins. Yeah. I know everybody else does, I believe. And I just think that it's, the only thing I would just ask people is to be positive and step outside their comfort zone a little bit, especially if it's for the community. Understand what your why is and be humble. And we can continue building this great city together.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you having me on and wish great things for you and what you're doing here with your new campus.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I in some ways I feel like we're kindred spirits. I just hearing some of the stuff that you've said today, just the emphasis on humility and kind of growing through trials and what feels like setbacks even, in moments of failure, but growing through those things, that resonates deeply with me. I'm sure many others as well. But I'm telling you, I think the thing for me that's going to just continue to stick is that We're not always short on resources or money. We're short on vision. And so maybe we just continue to look into the future, dream big dreams, be bold for that. And invite a whole bunch of people along the way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Andy, thank you so much for your time. And yeah, just really appreciate your work for our city, your love for our city, and the way that you're bringing that revitalization to pockets of our area.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Love Foco Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love Foco and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.